Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Baldhead Radio. I am, of course, your host, Brett Krusen. I keep wondering, why do I keep using that intro music? It's a little something I slapped together in the studio probably 30 years ago, and it just seemed to fit with the direction the show had gone because I had a lot of independent horror movie people on, actors, directors, producers, things like that. I had a guy that wanted to actually write an intro for Baldhead Radio, a good friend of mine out in New York. But, you know, he's a busy, busy man. So that never really came to fruition. But I might be doing something myself out of the studio here. I don't know. Something to tweak around, play with, whatever. In any case, tonight we got a guy on who everybody knows. But a lot of people don't know his name. They know his works. We can go all the way back to the 80s with TV. We can go way, way back. And I'm talking about things like Greatest American Hero, Twilight Zone the movie, Heart to Heart. Anybody remember that show? 1983. I used to love that show when I was a kid. Knight Rider, of course, I loved. And the list goes on. We'll be getting into a lot of that stuff. This is going back over 30 years, of course. But this has been in the works for a very long time. You know, it helps in this business, if you can call what I do a business, which it is not. It is pretty much my hobby. But I, in connection with people in the business, because of this show and because of people that I've known for a long time. So this is finally happening. And I'm really, really happy and excited, kind of quite a bit giddy, actually, to be honest. So I'm going to bring him on now, Mr. Al Leong. Al, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, Brett. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing like really awesome.
I feel great. Yeah, go.
Awesome. Last couple months of my life have been quite momentous, quite a lot of things going on. If anybody's curious, you can go to Laptop Puppies YouTube channel. Just do a search for Laptop Puppy, all one word, and you'll see a lot of stuff going on over there, which is very cool. But tonight, we're talking with Mr. Al Leong, and I am very grateful and excited to have you live on Baldhead Radio tonight, and there's a lot of things, you know, questions, just all kinds of things that I've always wondered since, you know, I've seen you since I was a teenager on all the
great
things.
I thought you
were
like 85 years old. How can you be a teenager?
Listen, I lie about my age. You know, you got to do that. You got to do it.
Okay.
So basically, you know, of all the things that you've done a great many things. Oh, I forgot. I need to mention that there's a mutual friend of ours, and you've known him
Who's
for a
that?
Long time. I've known him even longer. However, he is also going to be on the show tonight, and I just want to bring him in, and he's going to be a part of the discussion, because the both of you
okay.
have done a lot of projects together, right? So, Mr. Michael Dawson, how are you doing?
Very good. How are you all doing?
Oh, great.
I'm doing well.
It's awesome to know that everybody's doing well. I mean, isn't that
we're
a great thing?
Good.
It's like always one person. Those can be one person is like, I had a shitty day. You know? I don't want to be that guy.
I never have a shitty day.
Never, right? Me neither. You
never.
Know why?
Never.
I choose not to have shitty days. Life's going to throw all kinds of shit at you. You just got to go, okay, I'm not going to let that, you know.
Yeah.
My dad used to say, be like a duck. And, you know, I know ducks don't swim in shit, but I bet you if they did, they'd probably run right off their backs.
They probably would, yeah.
Yeah, right. So where do we start? Wow.
At the beginning.
You know, as I mentioned, let's start at the beginning. As I mentioned earlier, you know, back in the 80s, you know, you were a guy, you were, I don't know if you could say character actor or stuntman or something like that, but a lot of these shows that were really huge in the 80s, and it was actually a really good time for television. I mean, when you watch this stuff now, it's like, wow, really dated. It's like, wow, how did they pull that shot off? It looks really, you know. But for guys like us at our age, you know, I love watching old shows like Knight Rider. I mean, if you can find them, you know, through.
They're not that old.
Through either. Yeah, you know. The Equalizer, dude, was a show that I used to love. That old British guy.
I love that show, too. I love that show.
Rounds,
I thought
right?
he did a fantastic job, yeah.
I thought that show was awesome, and the cinematography and the mood of it was it wasn't dark, but it was kind of shadowy because this Equalizer guy worked, you know, above or, you know, below the law to just like make things right in people's lives. And what a great show that was. I wish I could find that. I can't even find it on DVD or Blu-ray or anything. I don't even think it's available for purchase in any way.
And he was a great guy too. Yeah.
What was the name of the guy that did that show? I can't remember
his name.
You talking
well,
about Edward Woodward?
You know,
Edward Woodward.
That's right, man. That's right. And you know, he was a great actor in that show. And I've never really seen him in a whole lot of other things back then.
Right.
You know, but and then of course, man, you know what? It's funny, Al, because you were in a lot of my favorite shows from the 80s, like Knight Rider, you know, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Show Hunter, which was awesome. Airwolf.
Yeah, it's a great show.
I mean,
yeah.
And another one that a lot of people don't even remember was Riptide. I loved that show. Two guys that were private detectives that lived on a boat in a harbor in Florida. Was it Florida, I believe? That was a great show.
I don't
show,
know
what man.
It was, but it was a great show. Well, you see, back in that time, though, there was a lot of TV action, which was great. Yeah.
Yeah. A-Team. Another one.
Yeah. That was a fantastic show. Yeah.
T.J. Hooker, of course, with William Shatner. You know why I love that show?
Yeah, yeah,
William
I know why
Shatner.
You love that show, because Heather Locklear was on it.
You know what? I would like to say that because, yeah, you know, Heather Locklear was hot, of course, but it was William Shatner because just the way that he played and portrayed that character, this cop out there on the streets just taking care of business and busting bad guys, was so tongue-in-cheek to me. You know what I mean? It was almost like a comedy for me. I loved watching every week, like, what the hell is this guy going to do next? Like, what crazy situation is he going to create?
I think Heather Locklear did a better job.
You know, I think I'll agree with you, sir. Man, that Heather Locklear. Whatever happened to her, man?
I have no idea.
She is. I think the last biggest thing she did was probably what was that, Beverly Hills 90210 back in the 90s?
I think it was Melrose Place, but yeah.
Melrose Place, you're right. That's right. Melrose Place was like an offshoot from 90210, kind of
teen angst,
you know, nighttime drama kind of stuff. And yeah, guilty pleasure of mine back in the 90s, I'm not going to lie. I still didn't know who I was.
You still don't now.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, I can't get away from this guy. I want to know, like, first of all, you have a martial arts background, of course.
Yes.
Does it go as far back as your childhood when you got started?
It started in New York City, and I had a great time. And then I came from St. Louis, I was in New York City when I was a kid. My dad used to stay up there. I used to spend the summers in New York City, and then once I came to L.A., I was in with another guy here in L.A. Yeah.
Okay. So what started happening from there?
Well, nothing. Just martial arts that I wanted to do at the time. But truthfully, if I had another choice, I would have been, once I came to L.A., I noticed, my teacher in junior high school used to show him and two friends riding both taco motorcycles out in the desert. He showed us every summer, all the kids that are in the class, and that's what I always loved to do. I said, I want to ride motorcycles. And so when I finally had enough money from working at Jack in the Box, I went out and I bought a motorcycle. I was 16 years old, and I bought a motorcycle, and my parents just flipped out because they never wanted me to have one. But, I just went out and bought it on my own, and I loved it. And ever since then, that's what I wanted to do, basically ride motorcycles. I did not want to do martial arts because, I had done plenty, and I was really tired of it. So I wanted to stop doing that, and I really wanted to ride motorcycles. But I wanted to buy land out in Santa Clarita, and build a track and all this stuff. But, it never happened. And a friend of mine, Doug Wong, opened a school in the valley here in San Fernando Valley here. And what happened was he said he wanted to build a team to take on everybody. And so I ended up joining the team. Otherwise, I would not have gone into martial arts. I would have just stopped and got on the motorcycles, which is something I wish I would have done today.
What was that first motorcycle you bought? First of all,
it was a Yamaha 125.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's a good starter
bike.
This
is 1970, yeah.
Oh, yeah, back in the day. That's when they had a flat seat and the low handlebars.
The Japanese were just starting to make motocross bikes is what they were. And so I think 1969, the Japanese started making dirt bikes. And Yamaha was very heavy into it, yeah. So, yeah, well, I know that I bought a 125, and after that, I started buying more and more motorcycles, and I loved them, and I wish I would have raced dirt bikes, without a doubt, because I think I would have done very well. I mean, that's kind of strange, because I don't think you'll ever hear any Asian say that, because all they do is start to fight stuff, on TV, but I love motorcycles, and I would have had no problems racing them, yeah.
And you know what? Motocross was really born in the mid-70s. Motocross was really became a sport, although it wasn't, like, recognized as a sport. It was something that people were doing. I remember in the early and mid-80s, I used to ride dirt bikes, and I still love riding dirt bikes, although, I'm old enough now where I've got to be a lot more careful. But back then in the 80s, we used to – one of my favorite things that I used to love to drive was the Honda Odyssey. No, not the minivan. It was made by Honda, and it was called an Odyssey, but it was
–
four-wheel drive vehicle. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
I had
the big roll bars on it. And those roll bars, I used to go out to Hesperia, and there's a riverbed that runs down south that leads to Hesperia Lakes. And there was a certain portion of the riverbed over off of Bear Valley Road where the bridge covers that, and they had these really steep dirt walls on either side of the riverbed, and we used to take that Odyssey, I'm talking vertically, 90 degrees, and then you would, if you couldn't make it up the hill and you end up, your top end ended up, your front end ended up falling over, you would just roll down it. The roll cage would completely, just go ragdoll, and you're fine, and you get to the bottom, you hit the gas again, and just keep going. It was great.
Yeah, I had one of those. I had one of those Odysseys.
Yeah, those things were awesome, man. I loved those
things. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Yeah. I used to ride at Indian Dunes.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I know where that's at.
Yeah, I used to go there all the time with it, yeah.
Yeah, that was such a great machine because you just felt invincible in it. You know what I mean? You could get yourself in some really messed up situations and know that you're going to be okay, you know, with that big roll cage. I think it had a four-point harness in it, didn't it, in the seat?
You know, I tell you what, I think it did. I can't remember that far back, but I had one back then, yeah.
Yeah, I remember I just felt like invincible in that thing. I would do some crazy stuff, and I would think I was like, 14 years old, just doing crazy stuff. So when you got into martial arts, wasn't your first choice, but you dedicated yourself to it, yes?
Well, I think when I was younger, it was a lot of fun. But then I think what it is there's too many people that are playing games on everything and anything that you get into. You know, everybody's doing this and that, and you're running into all the people that you like, you're running into people that you don't like, you know. So to me, I didn't really care for it that much because of that.
Yeah. So once you got into it, though, how did you approach it from what you just told me, when you did get serious about it again? Did you approach it from a different angle than most people that dedicate themselves to the martial arts?
I think the main thing that I do is the fact is, if there's something, it's like when I worked in the movie business, if there's a movie, what I try to do, I'm a stunt guy. I'm not an actor. I definitely want that to be known. I'm not an actor at all. And, occasionally they'll give me a line to say, and I'll say it, but I'm not an actor. And then the main thing is, whenever I try to get on a show or if it's a feature film, I try to get a hold of a script. And once I look at the script, if it sounds like a story that's going nowhere, I like to get off the show. And a lot of times people say, you can't get off the show. You're on the show, but you can get off the show, So a lot of times when I thought I'm working a show that I really didn't like or didn't think it was going anywhere, I would get off the show.
So you would put yourself in a very unique position in that world where you could pick and choose what you want to do, which is rare.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't do that because, because a lot of times if you lose a job, you may not work for 6 months, it's a different situation, And being Asian, it was even tougher because the fact is there's even less roles, So if you do something like that, you're taking a big chance, but I didn't care. All I know is if I'm working on something and I don't like it, I'd like to get off of it. Yeah, I would get off of it, yeah.
And you would take that hit so that you could work on something that you would rather.
Yeah. And if it took another 6 months or 3 months or whatever it took for another job to come along, I would wait. To me, it was no big deal. But, as soon as you leave a show, there's, 50 people right behind you waiting to take your part, So, and
oh,
that
yeah,
was fine
definitely.
With me because – yeah, that's fine with me because the fact is, if I didn't think it was any good, and I walked on a lot of shows that I thought were junk, and they were junk, then I'm happy with walking, and I don't care if somebody else takes it. I knew it wasn't going to be any good for me. So that's why a lot of times people say, you worked on a lot of good shows. Well, you got to know all the shows that I left because I felt that, they weren't good shows to be on, yeah.
Right. You know what? I got a lot of respect for that because, a lot of people in quote-unquote Hollywood, and that's just an encompassing word that involves, television and movies and what have you, they take whatever role they can until they feel that they're going to get to a place to where they can take the roles that they want, whereas you
Yeah, but a lot of times that doesn't come around,
that you
too,
want.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I mean, but you've taken it to a point where you're adamant about being happy with the work that you do, even if you're going to walk away from something that could make you some money. You're willing to you know, swallow that because it's not what you want to do. And I got a lot of respect for that. That's a form of integrity that, you know, that world doesn't really have a whole lot of.
Right, right, yeah. In fact, I don't know anybody else that used to do what I did, you know. Like I said, you know, I would walk away. I used to have people ask me, well, why do you walk away? And I said, well, because I ain't happy with it. I read the script, and I'm trying to figure out what in the world, who the hell wrote this thing, you know. And that's another thing. I think a lot of times people think just because something is written, it's great, you know, and it's not. You know, there's a lot of people, that even in writer's guild and everything else, just because they're a writer doesn't mean that they're writing a great story, you know, yeah.
Right. Right, and you are a part of the Writers Guild.
Yeah, I am, yeah. But all I know is I've seen so much stuff written by so many different people. Some people are great writers, some people are not, you know, yeah. But that's every part of the business, you know, because, like, directors, you can have directors that are fantastic, and you have directors that don't have a clue at what they're doing.
Yeah, that's way too common anymore.
Yeah, but you know, it's always been there. Again, like I said, you know, it's all in who you know, and a lot of stuff gets done because, you know, I know this guy, you know that guy, and you know what? Let's do a show, you know? And they do it, and it gets done.
It's like having, you know, some guy in Hollywood who's like, you know, not a very important person who has his nephew write a script, and then it gets pushed through, you know?
Right.
Some nephew
right.
brainstorm. And all of a sudden it ends up on the screen. It's like, dude, this crap. How did it get this far?
And it happens all the time, yeah.
Way too often, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into a few things here that I'm really curious about. You know, we talked about a lot of the stuff that you've done in the 80s, which, you know, I'm a big fan of a lot of these shows, and I remember seeing you back then, and I'm always like, who's that dude? Because he's here. He's over there. He's on this one. But didn't have a name, you know. It's like there was this documentary written about these types of character actors, and I can't remember what it was called. I think it's like Who's That Guy or something like that. But you started getting into things, I'm going through my list here, and I'm really starting to look for certain things here to be specific. Dude, one of my all-time favorite movies, and this is probably when you first were able to work with a certain director, back in 1986. And to this day, this movie, every time I pull out my very rare special edition DVD, which you can't find anymore, which has a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff in it, Big Trouble in Little China.
Great,
this movie,
fantastic. Mm-hmm.
It's awesome, and every time, you know, there are certain Saturdays that I just want to sit on the couch, put the DVD in, and just enjoy it. Kurt Russell, awesome in this thing, and this is a John Carpenter film.
And
what
John
was it
Carpenter
like
is fantastic, yeah.
Dude,
well,
John Carpenter
is
so honest.
See, John Carpenter is great, you know, I'll tell you why, because he's a real person. Because, again, like I said, a lot of movie people, I don't consider them as people, you know, because everybody thinks they're gods. I guess that's what it is, you know. And so, but John is, like, very down to earth. I thought he's fantastic. He always has been, yeah.
He's great. And what was it like, you know, working alongside, you know, Kurt Russell? Because, first of all, Kurt Russell, I've always loved him because he's a very good actor. I mean, when we look at The Thing, he was really intense in that. He was just really into that character. And then you look at Big Trouble in Little China, where you see his comedic side. Very funny, this guy.
Right, a great guy. Again, he's a great guy, yeah.
You worked with him twice, didn't you, Al? You worked with him.
I think I worked with him more than twice.
Yeah, at least as far as I know, Escape from L.A. and Big Trouble in Little China, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
And Escape from L.A., since you brought it up, Mike, you were in that too.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was there without.
I love to watch that scene, the helicopter scene, you know. I mean, it's there. I love it. Every time I go, like, that's my friend Mike. right there on the skid.
did you see Alan? Al comes down in the hang glider and just about kills almost everybody.
Yeah, right? That was amazing. And how did that get done, Al? Like, did they have you strung up or you were in a harness? How did all that
yeah,
work?
Yeah, I think we were in a harness. Yeah, I think we were in a harness and taken up. Yeah, yeah. But again, I said, the main thing I got to say is John has always been a fantastic person, you know, and I really like that as you know, being able to work with people that are real, you know, and he has always been a great, easygoing guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get back to Big Trouble in Little China just a little bit, because, I mean, I can't stop talking about this movie. Of course, I'll curtail myself a little bit because that movie was awesome. But your role, you know, you had the Wing Kong, and mm-hmm. it's a movie about, you know, of course, Little China in San Francisco, but it has to do with a lot of mysticism, Chinese mysticism.
Right.
A lot of legends, stuff that people don't talk about. And then you got all of a sudden these guys are just coming out in the open. And you were a part of that. And just the main thing that I love with your part in that was just that yell that you give. You know what I mean? When you're facing
yeah,
off
yeah,
in
no,
the
that,
alley.
That, that, yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
know,
it was like I said.
The semi truck
whole...
is there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm right in front of that truck, yes.
Exactly, dude. Y'all walk around, and then you're standing in front of the Pork Chop Express, and you're like in the middle of these guys, and you're like the one that actually gives the war cry to just make some shit
right,
happen.
Right, right. And we were the bad guys that won and beat everybody, yes.
Exactly, and it was great, man, because just like I said, that yell and the look on your face was intense. Like this is happening right now. We're going. This is it. This is happening. It's just a great moment, like a pivotal moment where just stuff just goes crazy. You know, it's awesome, dude.
Thanks. Yeah, it was again. Like I said, it was a fun film, and again, like I said, you have a great director, and a great director makes things so much easier and smoother. Guy that knows what he's doing. I very much love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is you know, in that business, you want to be working for somebody that is what they call an actor's director. And
uh-huh.
I think John Carpenter's that because he understands that the actors and you know the work that they do are the ones that are going to make or break a film.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can't treat your actors like crap.
Right.
So of course the next one, and this is one that a lot of people remember you in. You know, torturing Mel Gibson. I mean. Just putting these sponges hooked up to this generator and just shocking the hell out of this guy. You know, that scene, you know, you did have that one line. And then what was that like, you know, with Mel Gibson? Because I heard he's kind of tough to work with a little bit. You know, he's very
opinionated. You know, at that time he was not. At that time he was great. You know, I mean, I heard he went through some changes later on, but during that time he was great. And it was just
that was during his
free,
early
whatsoever.
Career, yeah.
You're right, right. And during that time he was very good, a very good person, yeah.
So you got to hang out with him quite a bit on the set during the filming of that scene. And what was he like behind the scenes back then? Like just hanging out, talking.
Well,
about
again,
how
I said,
was
very, very easygoing, very easygoing guy, you know, no problems whatsoever. But again, I said, I heard he went through some major changes later on, but that's after I hadn't seen him anymore. Yeah. But during that time,
yeah.
He was excellent. Yeah.
Awesome.
Again, it comes down to the fact is if I'm working with people and I feel like I'm going to have problems with them, I will walk away, you know. There's some people that
right.
I really don't even want to mention, but there are some people that I had to walk away from. And one of them was a big-time director, you know. And again, I said, I don't want to mention his name, but I walked away from the set because the fact is everybody says, he's going to be problems with you, you know. He's going to create problems with you. And so I left the set, you know. Yeah, but I, again, I said, I don't want to mention his name, but whenever I think there's something going to be strange that's going to be happening, I try to get away as soon as I can.
Again, that's your personal integrity on what it is that you're wanting to do and not doing the things that you don't feel right about, that just don't.
Right.
They don't jive with the direction that you want to go, which, again, I have to say I have a lot of respect for, because that's a hard thing to pull off in that world.
No,
you know,
it is, especially in the movie business. I said
exactly.
I try to think who else would do this, you know, and I have yet to see somebody else do that, yeah.
Exactly.
But, again, you know, after all these years, I'm happy that I did all that. You know, I did the walkaways and everything else. You know, yeah.
No regrets, dude. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, during this period of time, you're also doing a lot of TV as well. MacGyver, you know. What was that other one? Oh, I was just looking at. MacGyver, of course. You know, they put that out on Netflix late last year. So, you know, I watched the series, and I started watching again. I never really got into it a whole lot back when it was out in the 80s. But I started watching it again with my wife, just, you know, having binge Saturdays like we do sometimes. And I saw the episode that you were in. And I was like, holy shit, there's Al Leong. I had no idea he was in MacGyver. What the fuck? It was really funny. I'm like, babe, there's Al. Look, it's Al right there on the screen. I was almost ready to pause it, and my wife just goes, dude, can we just finish the episode? That's my wife. All right, yeah, I see. That's Al. I get it, you know.
You can create an Al Leong drinking game. You know, how many times can you – every time you spot Al Leong, you take a shot.
And you know I'm a drinker, so that would definitely fit
in
my
household. There you go.
And then, of course, we had the iconic They Live. Man, another movie that I watch on a Saturday afternoon, because, you know, Roddy Piper, of course, is awesome in that movie. I mean, who would have known the guy had acting chops until that movie came out?
Right.
Yeah, and he's a good actor in that movie. He's really good in that thing. I had no idea. You know, he's a wrestler with the, I think it was back then, it wasn't WWE back then, it was something another. You know, it was Vince McMahon, of course.
Right. Yeah. Vince
McMahon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's ubiquitous with that world, of course. He owns the empire, and then he comes out with this movie, John Carpenter again, of course, who is amazing. This guy, one thing I love about John Carpenter is he writes his own music for his movies. Come on,
right?
Who
does
that?
Yeah, yeah,
and it's great. Like, one of the things on the this limited edition, or I'm not sure what it is, but it's a two-disc DVD set for Big Trouble in Little China, is the video, the music video that he did for one of the songs that are in the movie. And it's so cheesy and beautiful all at the same time. John Carpenter's like a genius. Great. So They Live, you know, again... You know, you're known as, by this point, you're known as a henchman. The roles that you've done up to this point have all been pretty much geared towards that, and your career kind of went in that direction, and you're very good at it. And you're very memorable. Like I said, a lot of people, you know, at work today, I was mentioning to some of my pharmacists that, you know, I got a show tonight with Al Leong, and they're like, Al Leong, and I'll mention just a few of the bigger titles, and like, oh yeah, that guy. Like, they never knew what your name was, but they know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what was it like? I know you didn't have a lot of interaction with Roddy Piper on They Live, but I'm sure you ran into him quite a bit here and there.
Well, you know, I don't remember that much about that. I really don't remember that much about that.
I think you were in a separate scene altogether.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you were getting killed in an alleyway.
Yeah, exactly. That movie was great. And then, of course, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, right? Genghis Khan.
Yeah, another very fun film.
Hanging out in the sporting goods store, finding these new weapons. That scene was great because the way that you would pick up that aluminum baseball bat and look at it and test its weight and start swinging it around, you're like, wow, if I had this thing back in the war, I could have done some damage.
It's a lot lighter than the club I was carrying, yeah.
Now, Al,
did you come up
with all that stuff in the when you were shooting the stuff in the sporting goods store in the mall? Did you decide to play around with those weapons?
No. I think from what I remember, they probably asked me what I wanted to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I end up picking up, I think, that baseball bat, you know. Yeah, but I guess so. Yeah, yeah.
And didn't you put a football helmet on your head?
Yeah.
How did that come to be?
Okay, well, first of all, I did not do that flip off that. I did not do that flip off of that the trampoline.
You did?
No?
I did not. No. Somebody else did that, yeah. At the moment, I can't remember his name right now, but yeah, at the very moment, I can't remember his name. But somebody else had done that. And then I did not go on the ice rink because I had broken my ankle. And I was going across the ice rink because, yeah, I had cracked my ankle, so I couldn't get on roller skates.
Hmm.
Ice skates, yeah.
Ice skates, yeah. Oh, wow. So there's a little tidbit for the listeners, a little information for Bald Head Radio. I bet that a lot of people don't even know that. Because,
I didn't know that.
Wow. Oh, nice little exclusive there. Thank you. That's very nice.
Well, you know, I like to tell the truth. There's two other stunt guys that were involved there. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Well, they sure did look a lot like you. But, you know, you put a hockey helmet on a guy, it's pretty
difficult
to see which one guy from another.
Yeah. Right. Well, actually, I think I put the helmet on, but then the actual flip was not done by me. Yeah.
Gotcha. And then, a guilty pleasure of mine, of course, 1993's Last Action Hero with Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's, again, a guilty pleasure of mine because it's not one of his top rank. However, it's got a lot to say about, Last Action Hero, of course, is this magical movie theater, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is this character that comes out of the screen and ends up being in the real world and having to deal with this real world that is completely different from his world as a character, not the actor that plays said character. He's the actual character. I really like that movie because it's a lot different from stuff that Schwarzenegger usually does. And there's quite a bit of comedy, of course, just the way that he is learning how to deal with this real world. Were you able to like meet him, or I know you had a very small part in that.
He was again, a very easygoing guy. He talked to everybody. Got to meet him. Yeah. I mean, he talks to everybody, especially the stunt guys. You know, he seems like he hangs around with a lot of stunt guys. So, yeah, real nice guy, yeah.
Well, he is a stunt guy. I mean, in a lot of ways. He does a lot of his own stuff back in the early days, especially with, like, Conan the Barbarian. I mean, punching out a donkey, yeah, that was all Schwarzenegger right there. Even though the donkey wasn't real. He still
had to get a
donkey
double.
Donkey out. It was a donkey double.
Yeah, double the donkey for that.
How much do they pay the doubles, I wonder?
Not enough to be a donkey double.
Would you do that? Would you, like, put the suit on and everything?
No, not me.
No. This is coming from a guy who used to do car hits.
Yeah, no. No donkeys. I don't do donkeys. No animals.
Car hits, dude. You know what, bro? I remember you telling me about, oh, man, I had this scene and I had to do a car hit. And I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? Like, how much did they pay
got
you
paid for it.
To stand there?
Paid for
and
it.
I know you get paid for it, but shit, man, you're talking about, you know, bodily injury. Even if everything goes perfect, you're probably limping away from it.
Well, no, you talked to Al about that. He's the one who ran my first car hit. He was there. He was the one who threw me in the car.
Are you serious?
Yes, he was the coordinator. He was the man. Yeah, yeah. He was the one who showed me how to throw myself into a car.
He did a great job. Mike did an incredible job. It was just everything went great. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it all comes down to, you know, how fast the car's going and understanding when to move. Yeah. And Mike did a fantastic job. Yeah. And you hope you do it.
Yeah. I'm still alive, so he did a pretty good job. Yeah.
Not only that, dude, but you're as limber as ever.
Well, pretty much, yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much at our age, you know, you can't expect too much, yeah. I'm like, so, Mike, how much did they pay you to get hit by a car? You're like, yeah, I don't really get any
too much.
Numbers. I was like, fuck, dude.
I don't even remember. But it was it's good enough to do it again.
Well, evidently, because you did it again and again.
And again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a number of times. So, again, I was like, dude, I don't understand that. I mean, because to me, the thought of, I'm not a stunt guy, okay? I think about, wow, if I was faced with that, you know, trepidation would be, you know, the word that I would not use. It would be more like scared, really, really scared, shitless. Oh, my gosh. How, I don't know, dude. It just, I couldn't believe when you told me that this is one of the things that you did as a stuntman. And like, oh my gosh. Anyway.
Well, you know, it's like Al says, if there's always somebody else lined up behind you ready to do it. So if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. It's
right.
Yeah, you know, that's how it
and
works.
If you get seriously injured and the tape didn't go right, why they still got another guy that's going to do it?
Exactly.
This is also true. Yes, yes. Uh-huh. You are expendable. We're all expendable.
Doesn't that suck? I mean, really. I mean, you're doing stuff that takes talent, it takes timing, it takes planning, yet there's always that guy standing right behind you waiting for you to either get injured or just say, no, I'm not doing that right away.
Yeah.
You're going to be in. So, yeah. You know, having both of you on the show is leading into the next project that where you guys really, really started working together closely and where you guys really became really good friends. Up in Canada, back in the early 90s, Kung Fu The Legend Continues. Now, Mike, you worked on that extensively, not the first season, but I believe you came on in the second season?
Second, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
we had talked about
Al.
This when you were on my show a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
this
is where you and Al really cemented a relationship. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well. We literally showed up one day and we had to do a fight with each other, and that's kind of how relationships get cemented. That's one way.
Yeah, and I saw him every day for years afterward. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how many seasons did it go?
Four.
Four
in total.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you spent three seasons together, you know, coordinating.
We spent two. But I met Al on my second season because he came up as a guest star he was the main villain for an episode called The Warlord. And he came up and he was the main bad guy. And that's when I first met him. And then he came back the following year to fight coordinate the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history.
That second season, I was brought up, you know, as an actor. And believe me, boy, they gave me so much dialogue. I'm saying, I can't remember all this dialogue. You know, and so yeah, but I did, you know, but to me, it was work because I said, I'm not an actor. I really don't care to be. And so it was a lot of work for me to remember all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
And
they
also during
had
that year.
Yeah,
you also had to fight, right? I loved on the Northern Shaolin Praying Mantis Facebook page, there's a photographic section in there that anybody could check out that has a lot of photos, behind-the-scenes photos from, you know, when you guys were both on that show together. A lot of cool stuff that I people could check out. And, you know, these are not the types of things that, you know, that you would see other than that place, your Facebook page for that show. And there's a lot of really good photos of during that period of time. And you can see how much fun you guys had during that time, of course, with David Carradine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I understand Carradine was a very cool dude. You know, he had some issues, but we won't get into that. But basically, he was a very cool dude to work with. You know, you get that feeling when you look at a lot of those photos.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy, very nice man.
Yeah. Rest in peace,
yes.
Of course, Mr. Carradine. Yeah, so that's where, you know, you guys really started out with a few things. And I'm not sure if you guys are willing to talk about a certain thing, to be honest. It was something, Al, that you were working on called Daddy Tell Me a Story, yes?
Yes, yes.
Scarecrow's Dream, that's the
yeah,
title.
Yeah, now it's called Scarecrow's Dream, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's, you know, I was leading up to that. You just took my thunder, Mike. Thanks, man. It started out as a certain script, and there was an actor who was, you know, a big part of that script, a character that decided that he just wasn't going to show up anymore. And,
exactly.
You had to
shots.
Basically
exactly,
rewrite
yeah.
the whole thing. And as you had to rewrite the whole
yeah.
thing, the story changed.
Yes.
Yes?
The whole story changed, yes. Yes, it went completely different, yeah. And so basically, once he didn't come back, I tried everything to get him to come back, you know, and he said, no, I don't want to come back. I don't know what the reason was, but he would not come back no matter what I tried. I must have called him 3 times, tried to get a hold of him. He said, no, he doesn't want to come back, you know, and he wouldn't explain the reason why. So all I know is whatever footage I had, I said to myself, boy, I can't go back up there and shoot because I don't know I'm shooting. So I took whatever we had and figured out, well, you know, I got this scene, I got that scene. Well, and I changed this whole story. So, yeah, I completely rewrote the whole story and then went back and reshot scenes that I thought I needed. And Mike put it all together. And, yeah, so we're ready to roll with the thing, yeah.
Right.
We had actually
and,
we had a couple of actors that dropped out. We had
right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you ended up taking a role in that, right?
Yes, this is correct.
You did a great job. You did a great job. Yeah, yeah. Once you see it, you'll like it.
Well, here's the thing, Al and Mike, both of yous. I have not been able to talk Mike into giving me a copy of this thing for how long now, Mike? Come on, dude.
You got to wait for the deluxe edition.
He did some more changes, and I'm waiting for a new version too.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting just like you.
We are all
so
waiting.
You guys gonna,
yes.
We're all waiting. I know this is probably a pipe dream, but are you going to try to resurrect this thing?
It's good day. Yeah, it's completely resurrected, and I'm going to attempt to take it to some big people, yes.
Yes.
Can we mention who you took it to originally? Can we do that, or is this not something to talk about?
No.
Okay.
The deluxe edition.
Fair enough.
The definitive, we'll call it the definitive director's cut. And that's when you want to start the meter running for that.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
No problem. Because it's a wonderful story, but if it's not something you want to delve into, I'm gonna
no.
respect that. This is a behind the scenes kind of story, so we'll move on from there. But I did have to bring it up because it is such a I'll just say it's a fascinating story. That's all.
It's a great story.
No,
it was made. You know, it was a. I mean, you could almost do a movie about the making of the movie. I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Al, you have to tell the story of the night we spent in the linen factory. Do you remember that?
Do I have to tell the story? No, you have to tell the story.
No, you got to tell the story.
No, you can tell the story. It's just we were in this linen factory. Was it four stories high?
It was at least four stories tall, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, it had linen all over the place because all these people that were sewing in the morning, you know, they just leave everything all over the place. The place is a huge mess full of stuff, and we're shooting guns in there. And I mean, anything could have lit up that whole place. Could have been, you know, a disaster zone for all of us. You know, it was strange. We had a lot of fun, but it was extremely dangerous. Yes. Because of Mike.
Very flammable.
Because of Mike.
Lots of hot shells flying everywhere. And then we had to stay the night there.
Yeah, we spent the night there, but it was an extremely dangerous, but it was like an incredible place to shoot. But if you were in there, you would say, well, I'm not going to fire a gun in here, you know. But we did, and, you know, we shot at least for about 10 rounds in there, you know, and But we had a lot of fun in there, but it was a very scary place to shoot. Yes.
Yes. Yes, we had to sleep. Yeah, we had to. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it sounds like a very exciting kind of experience, full of treachery and possible accidents.
It was. We could have burned the whole block down.
Right.
But we had to stay the night there to watch our equipment that we had to leave overnight, and it was just Al and I. And there was nowhere to sleep, so we had to sleep on the floor. And the place had rats. I don't know if you remember this, Al.
Nice.
There's rats there. But it was fun. It was actually.
But
you know,
wait a minute! You guys are in a linen factory. Why couldn't you sleep on a big, comfy pile of linen?
Well, yeah, it was sewing machines everywhere, and we just, you know, that didn't belong to us. We didn't want to mess with that stuff.
Yeah, and I think all the whatever linen was, it was all rolled up in stock, you know, against the wall where you can't sleep on. You can't really lay down on it, yeah. Otherwise, I'm sure we would have.
Yes.
Camping out, man. Now, was that in L.A.?
No.
Okay.
No, that was up in up in Canada. Yeah.
Oh, it was up in Canada. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I didn't realize you'd done it when you guys were up in Canada. Okay.
We went back up. We went back up
just for that.
It was a few years after the show, after the Kung Fu show. We went back up there. Yeah.
And you know, back then we had a name for the show. We won't mention it, but you know what I'm talking about.
I sort of do, yeah. I don't know. But long time ago. But you just have to wait for the director's. Yeah, you got to wait for the director's definitive edition, we'll call it, the deluxe edition. That's what you're playing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I'm sure that you will like it. The story, everything about it was really great, and I'm serious about it. I'm not saying it just because, you know, that we did it, but everything about it, story-wise, actor-wise, everything about it was really good and a lot of fun and a lot of different sets and everything else for the amount of money that was spent just shooting it. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand the budget was
true.
It was a little up there.
No, it wasn't up there. It wasn't that bad. But
it was pretty low budget. Yeah, it was low budget by comparisons. Back then and today was extremely low budget. Yeah, I would say.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. And also during that time, The Legend Continues. Al, you were quite prolific. There was a lot of other things you were doing during that time as well. Quite a bit, actually, IMDb. According to your IMDb, I'm saying that. All during the same year, Beverly Hills Cop 3 as a car mechanic, The Shadow, Vanishing Sun 3, a TV movie, Double Dragon.
I don't think I could have been doing anything else but that show during that time because we were so busy on that show that all that other stuff had to have been done afterwards. I really don't think that all that was done at the same time. There's no way.
I think some of those were done, like, shot before and then weren't released until, after we were working on the show.
Once Mike and I were working, believe me, there was no time to go anywhere else.
Yeah, and you guys were way up in Canada, so it's not like
rush back to LA. Yeah, yeah, and we spent a lot of time shooting stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
So somebody's lying to you.
I think you shot the stuff, and then it just didn't get released until
These are release dates. You know, we had... On before I started this show, I was a co-host on another show for 2 years before I started this show, and we had I can't remember her name, of course, but she was the maid on The Jeffersons, which was a spinoff from the Archie Bunker show, and we had her on the show, and of course our research was based on her IMDb information. And she was like, "Where are you getting this information from? It's completely erroneous, and some of it was I won't say inflammatory, but just so far incorrect that it was almost it was pretty bad." And we were going off this information. And it turns out that the information was completely erroneous. And you know, she was upset, I totally understandably. And then after, you know, when we had the after show, you know, call, she said she was going to get a hold of her publisher and her lawyer and contact IMDb. And seriously. And she did follow through with these things, and IMDb actually went and made all the corrections that needed to be made. And then she did the show again, and she thanked us because she wasn't really hip to the internet thing and the information that's out there. So we actually did her a favor by turning her on to, you know, information that was up on a major, you know, IMDb, Internet Movie Database.
So as soon as I hang up, I'm going to get right on this.
You might want to go check it out, dude.
We're going to get right on it.
But again, go ahead.
IMDb is not totally accurate. I'll be the first person
not.
To say
it's,
that.
It's kind of like a Wikipedia of, you know, movies and directors
exactly
and actors
like
and what have you.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know,
you
anybody
have
can
to,
contribute information to it.
Yeah.
So you
got to
be
have
careful.
To take it with a grain of salt. You got to be, not trust it completely. But I think in regards to those credits, pretty sure that, because I know I saw The Shadow, I think I may have seen The Shadow with you, Al, up in Canada. So you had already finished working on that by the time we were up there. So
The Shadow is listed as 94, and that's probably the actual release date, not the production date or thing.
Because it takes a while for things to get, you know, produced and post-production and all that sort of thing. So.
Oh yeah, dude, I'm actually involved with some of that right now, which again I can't talk about, but
it's top secret.
It's top secret. It's something I've never done before, but it's a project that I'm working on with a guy out in New York, also with a production company. I will plug the production company. It's Fuzz on the Lens Productions in Staten Island. But that's all I can say. But I'm getting into what it takes to get something like that done, and I will say I'm enjoying the process, It's something I've never done before, but it is. I've never done anything creative that involves a deadline. This is something completely new to me. So, yeah, it takes a long time to produce something and get it through the whole process and get something done. It's not something that happens overnight. It's not something that happens in a week or two. It's not even something that happens in several months. Sometimes it's a year-long process, you know.
Or longer.
Sometimes it's longer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, I want to plug Fuzz on the Lens Productions because they have Abnormal Attraction. Is their second feature-length film, independent film, that they've been working on for about 2 years. And it's got a lot of big names in it that they were able to procure that were very interested in what these young guys have been doing. We're looking at a release date. Well, we were looking at this summer. Now we're maybe looking at this fall. It'll premiere in New York and then hopefully move its way out to LA, where I will be doing an interview with all of these guys on Bald Head Radio during that time. Probably Santa Monica. I think the last time they came out was in Santa Monica when I was able to hook up with all these guys. But they're great guys, Michael Levy, Jason Levy, Steve Delasala. Of course, a lot of great writers. Robert Privatera is a writer on a lot of that. And a lot of great actors. Gilbrand Acevedo, Johnny Collins, just, and then the big names. I mean, you can just go to IMDb and search for Fuzz on the Lens, and the movie is Abnormal Attraction. Great, great stuff that's going on out of that studio in New York.
We will check
Al
it
Leong,
out.
Yeah, definitely. And then all the listeners, you know, go check it out. There's some great stuff coming out of that place, and I'm going to be a part of something that might be coming out of there. Just can't say too much about it. Al, you wrote a book.
Okay. But
and
yes, I did.
Yes. And Mike, first of all, I want to say, Al, that I will be getting together with you and Mike this weekend. And it's something I'm really looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to seeing you again, because the last time I saw you, I dropped Mike off at your apartment, and this was, what, Mike, like 6 years ago? Come on.
That's
5 years ago.
About 6 years,
it
yeah.
More.
About six. No, it's six.
6 years.
You got it right, six. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a long time ago. And it's the first time that I actually met Al. And I had a little bit of an awkward moment. And, you know, I'm a right-hander, and I went to shake your hand, and it was, like, really awkward for me because I was unaware. Your left hand is the one. So when I see you, it's going to be all about the left hand shake, bro.
Well, now neither arm works.
Are you serious? Come on.
No, I think it works.
No, it still works, yeah.
So you had a stroke. You had two strokes.
Yes. Yes.
And that had a major effect on your career, of course. It had to have. Because you're a very physical person.
Yeah, it crippled my whole right side, yeah. I limp. I do. My right arm is useless. I've got a double broken collarbone right now, and it's been broken for 2.5 years. Because I was trying to ride a bicycle with one arm, and before I used to ride a unicycle without any problems, but after the stroke, my whole body is like off balance, and so I was trying to ride a two-wheel bicycle 2.5 years ago, and what happened was I rode it for like 3 miles in a straight line, and then I had to swing a U-turn at the end, and I was practicing underneath my garage, which was a lot wider than the bike path that I was on. And on this bike path, I tried to swing a U-turn, and it was so tight that I couldn't swing it around, and I crashed the bike on the ground, and I fell on the ground, and I broke the collarbone, and I broke a rib, and I couldn't get off the ground for like 15 minutes. I was laying there, and I was with a friend, a girl named Sue, and after about 15 minutes, she helped me up. She goes, "You okay?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." Then we rode back 3 miles, and then I got in my truck. She got in her car, and we went to go eat, and after we ate, this was on a Sunday, I said, you know what, I'm going to see the doctor on Monday because there's 10 million people, because being Sunday, everybody's at the hospital, emergency hospital. So I said, I'm going to the hospital tomorrow. So she goes, you sure you're okay? I said, yeah, I'm okay. So I went home, she went home, and then what happened was an hour later, she drives over to my house. She goes, let's go to the hospital now, you know. So she drove me to the hospital. And, you know, it took forever there because I said there's a million people there. And then they go, you broke your collarbone and you broke a rib, you know. And so they said, we're going to put you in the figure eight brace. So they put me in the figure eight brace. And then 2 weeks later, I go to Costco and I buy a bunch of stuff at Costco. And then they put everything in a box, okay? And then I got to go up a flight of stairs in order to get to my apartment. So I walk up the flight of stairs. And then the door was locked. The gate was locked. So I had to unlock the gate. In order to unlock the gate, I had to put this box of stuff in my right arm to hold it while I unlocked the gate with my left hand. So I started to unlock the gate, and within about 8-10 seconds, my right arm gives away, and it severely breaks that collarbone even worse, because this was just 2 weeks later after the first break, and it got so bad, it spun my whole arm down that I went to my cancer doctor. Because I had brain cancer 25 years ago. So I went to my cancer doctor, and he goes, what happened? I said, well, I broke it riding a bicycle, and just today I broke it because I was picking up stuff at Costco, and I had to put it in my right arm, and I gave him the whole story. And so he looked at it, and the bone split in half, and it's about ready to rip through the top of my skin. And then he goes, you're in bad shape. He goes, I don't know what to do with you. He goes, I'm going to send you to a bone specialist, you know? So he sends me to a bone specialist. We go to the bone specialist looks at me, and he goes, yeah, you really broke that collarbone really bad. And I said, is it going to rip through the top of my skin here? And then he goes, well, I'll give you, he gave me, you know, morphine, all kinds of weird stuff. And then he said, all I can do is tell you to stay in that figure eight brace that they put you in, because there's nothing we can do about it. So he left me in a figure eight brace. I wore it for 3 months, and after 3 months, I went back to the bone specialist. He goes, it's not healing. Wear it for another 3 months. So I wore that figure eight brace for 6 months, and after 6 months, I went back in. He goes, your bone is not healing, and it will never heal. He goes, your bones are junk from cancer, you know? So it's been 2.5 years, and my collarbone has been broken ever since. Yeah,
and it's not healing at all.
Yeah, well, he said don't ever expect it to heal. Yeah, and he goes, don't fall down again, because whatever you break is probably not going to heal.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, so that's that. So I'm walking around with broken collarbone along with having the strokes and everything else. Yeah.
Well, that just means that the whole skydiving plan is completely, you know.
Yeah.
No, I can still skydive. I still skydive. I still skydive. That's next weekend.
Yeah. Okay. So we're okay. We're still on for skydiving then. It's good. It's going.
Yeah. You're going out right before me.
Yeah, I'll go out before you.
Guys
you. Yeah.
you guys can count me out, man. I'm not skydiving. Sorry, I just don't have the balls for that type of adrenaline.
Boy, it's like us putting you back in your Odyssey.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what? I still miss that Odyssey, and if I got my hands on one, which I don't think you can even find those things anymore.
You can't find it out of nostalgia. But they've got so many great off-road vehicles now. You'd love it, because me and Mike have been
riding around
in a Rhino. In a Yamaha Rhino,
awesome,
you know, and it was awesome. And we did some crazy rides. We did some rides where you're going straight down, where it felt like the back end was going to flip over the front end. I mean, we were going something really, really extremely steep stuff, you know. But luckily, we made through everything, and we through a lot of that stuff, which was great, a lot of fun.
You know what, though? The Rhino is not as durable as the Odyssey was, because the Odyssey was built
No. The Odyssey is nowhere near as good as the vehicles that are out now. Believe me, they're not. Odyssey was a nice, fun thing. But if you go into stuff today, you wouldn't believe it. Because for $20,000 today, you know what I'm saying? But the Odyssey was like, what, a couple grand or something like that, right, back then, I think?
Yeah, it was like about $2,000 or $3,000, yeah.
Yeah. Well, today you can lay out $22,000, and believe me, it ain't cheap junk, you know, yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So I was getting around to, I will be seeing you and Mike this weekend. Be hanging out with
okay.
you, and then Mike's gonna come over here to my home and check out my studio.
Okay.
But we're gonna talk about the book.
Okay.
Al Kabong.
Yeah,
I understand the scene's got some illustrations and some really cool stuff. I'm looking forward to getting, hint, my autographed copy of this thing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And,
okay, well,
and
we'll work on
you
that,
talk
yeah.
about it? You want to talk about the book?
So I want to talk about the book. Well, again, like I said, it's got a lot of stuff to do with the movie industry. It's my life story is what it is. You know, I started as a kid in St. Louis, and I talk about, you know, being from St. Louis and, you know, all the stuff that I did as a kid, you know, and then we grew up and then came to L.A. and, you know, all the different things that I did here. So it's a combination of a lot of stuff. All the sicknesses I've had, you know, belly fever
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of, I've had everything, you know, and you'll see in that book, I've been very sick my whole life. Ever since I had cancer, I had everything after that, believe me, almost everything that you can imagine, that even stuff that I didn't know even existed, you know, and I had it, yeah. And it's all Mike's
wow.
fault.
that's why it's called The Eight Lives of Al Kabong.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he's gone.
Yeah, you'll see, I've been through a lot of weird stuff.
And he's
yeah.
not a cat,
yeah.
so we didn't go with nine lives.
No.
Yeah,
well,
right.
He's got one more, at least, yeah.
He's got one more.
I'm not sure about that.
What's your sequel book? That's the next book, The Ninth Life of Al Kabong.
The end of the life. The end of the life.
I was going to say something more like the last life.
Yeah. No more lies.
So how long did it take you to write that book?
Actually, I wrote it with a girl that we did within 6 months. She's incredible, and she did a great job, and yeah. And so we did within, I got together with like every Friday or so, once a week, and we just hammered it out within 6 months. It was done. And then within another
wow.
month, it went in and we got it published and everything else. And yeah, it's incredible that we got it done as fast a time as we did, yeah.
Well, you started that book
crazy
after your stroke, right? Is that right, Al? You started
it was after the stroke,
yeah.
the stroke,
okay.
yeah.
Okay.
So,
and
then
that's
that you... Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, it was my brother's wife, Beverly, that said, you should write a book of your life because you did so many different things and it had so many different things. So that's what started it, and then I ended up writing it, yes.
Wow. So I understand that you shopped it around to, 13 different publishers, and 10 of those, they weren't interested because of the illustrations?
Before I had the book done, I talked to people and then they said, everybody, I can't remember what they said something like, I said, I'll put colored pictures in it. And people kept saying, you'll never be able to get colored pictures in it because it'll cost you so much money or something like that. I can't remember all the
yeah.
stuff. But yeah, I had a lot of different people that said a lot of different things saying, there's no way you can do a book like that and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I had a lot of people that said, don't do this, don't do that, you know, but I really can't remember all the stories behind it. But yeah, a lot of people were said that don't do this, don't do that, don't write about this, don't write about that. You know, it's weird. Because you'll see this, when I write a book, I tell the truth. And the bottom line is, people don't want to hear the truth. But you know what? I've never had a complaint yet where somebody says, you know what, the stuff, you can't write like that. You know, you can't say that, you know. And the bottom line is, you know, even when Mike and I were up in Canada, when we had problems, I wrote it. And you'll see it in this book. I'll say it straight on out exactly what happened. And people say, you can't write that in a book, you know. And believe me, when you see this book, you'll see I wrote a lot of stuff. I write the truth, you know, what really happened, yeah.
You know, when you're writing the story of your life, you're going to write the truth. And if publishers are telling you or any other people are telling you, no, you can't write that, then you look at them and you say, fuck you, this is my life I'm writing about. This is what I'm going to write.
But if you see a lot of people that do write books, you're going to see a lot of times everything sounds like everything was so sweet, this was so great, and that was so great. You know, a lot of things are and a lot of things are not. You know, a lot of people say you should never write negative things or something, you know. But again, like I said, to write the truth made a difference. It's my style of writing, you know. I don't like to say, well, this never happened, and everything that I did was so great, because everybody was so nice, you know. If they were nice, I would say it. If they were not nice, I would say that too.
Well, you think a lot of people had a lot of worries about how it reflect on the industry, this book?
Well, it's not just the industry. It's a little bit of everything. Like I said, it's not just the industry in this book, but a lot of people said, you just can't say that about it. You can't say, like I was talking to you earlier, I said, you know what? There's good writers, there's bad writers. They could be in the writers, but they could not be in the writers. It doesn't really matter. Well, there's good directors, there's bad directors. There's good producers, there's bad producers, you know? And that's
right.
The truth, you know? I could lie and tell you, everybody in business is so fantastic. It's unbelievable. And you hear that all the time. A lot of people talk that way, you know? But the truth is, if you really work out there, you can see it ain't that way, you know? There are great people, but there are people that you say, my God, what is this guy doing in this business? You know, it's weird.
Yeah, it's not the magic land that the public thinks it really is. And you actually
right.
write about that side of things, the you know, the downside of things, and so basically the book has a lot of honesty in it, not just about
your life,
but about your experiences. You know,
yeah,
doing
exactly.
what you do.
Right, right.
So the next thing I want to talk about, and this is the most current, is Henchman, the Al Leong story. And I know you've gone through, you've been trying to get this thing, you know, finished for some time, and you've run into some roadblocks.
Yeah, I think it's been going around like 4 or 5 years, yes.
Yeah, and
the reason
that,
is this
these roadblocks. Yeah, go ahead.
The main reason is because, one person that started it, and then they decide, well, you know what, they can't do it anymore, and they stop, and somebody else tried to pick it up, and then they couldn't really handle it, and then Vito, who's the last person right now, he's on, and he's been working with it. But, you know, I think our main problem is just we're trying to get a lot of different people that I had worked with, you know, in the business, and a lot of people are very busy out there, you know, and so it's sometimes it's hard to get them, you know, like The Rock, you know, we're trying to get The Rock, and he's like nonstop, you know, he's working on everything, you know, and we've been having a lot of fun trying to get a hold of him and a couple other people that we've been really trying to get, but, you know, they've been so busy, can't get them, you know. So you know, like I said, it's been like going on like I think 4, maybe 5 years now, and we expected to get it done a couple years ago, you know. But now the talk
right.
is we're going to try to get it done at the end of this year, and whoever we get is whoever we get. Whoever we can't get, we're going to just leave them out because, you know, it's just taking too long, yes.
Well, you and Mike have both worked with Dwayne Johnson on The Scorpion King back in 2002. And I understand he's a pretty awesome guy to work with. Yeah.
He was, yes.
What was your experience with him on that set?
Well, my experience was everything he did was he's a very professional person, but he's a very down-to-earth person. And again, I said, it's sort of like that John Carpenter thing, you know, a very real person, you know. And, I mean, this guy, he's a big guy, you know. If you want to do whatever you want to do, he could, you know. But he doesn't take that type of an attitude, you know. Always real nice. Michael Clark Duncan was great. You know, everybody on that set was incredible. And I was very happy with that, yes.
Yeah. So there, you know, it's funny because there are a lot of good people in the industry. There aren't as many good people as there are just people out there just for the sole purpose of just making money, and they lose the vision of what they were doing. Like everything everything that I do creatively, from the radio show to music that I'm getting back into writing again with this studio, all of it is. You know, I guess you could say nonprofit. This isn't like an organization where I'm, you know, taking care of little kids or whatever. But I don't want to get paid. I don't want to make money doing the things I do because that changes my vision and it changes my motivation. If my motivation becomes about making money, it's twofold. One is I will have to change the way that I do things and my creativity will be seriously hampered, if not completely lost. And number two, if my motivation is to make money, like with my radio show, and I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of my guests and a lot of people behind the scenes, you know, about monetizing the show. And no, I refuse to do it. I don't want to take sponsors. I don't want to do Patreon. I don't want to do any of that stuff because my creative process is, it needs to be free. It needs to flow. It needs to just do what it's going to do. Okay, I can't just do things because I'm going to make a couple of bucks out of it. I can't. So, you know, I've got a lot invested in the things that I do and the things that I'm currently working on. And that all comes out of my own pocket. And I'm totally cool with that because I own it. I'll own whatever comes out of this place without anybody asking me to change things because they were sponsoring it or they were funding it or anything like that. Everything I do not make money from, and I just don't want to make money from it. You know, I have my
money. Well, there's nothing wrong with making money. The bottom line is you know, like I said, there's people that they're just out there to cheat people to make money, you know, so it's a different type of a world
exactly.
with some different people, yes.
Exactly, and that's unfortunately, when you get into that world, it's a bunch of barracudas out there, you know. I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, you're involved, like Mike. You're still doing a lot of work in the industry. You're still doing stunt work. I mean, you're involved with a lot of things. Some of the stuff we talked about when you were on my show last year, and you're continuing to do these things. And yet, Mike, do you have the same type of approach as Al does as far as you'll take things that you believe in and then there are other things, opportunities that come your way that you have the ability to reject?
No, I do everything for the money.
Well, at least he's telling you the truth.
No, the money's good. The money's nice. You do need money to sustain your vision, you know, if you look at it that way. But yeah, there are certain things I won't do. You know, I mean, I have a limit, but you do need money to sustain, you know, your creativity if you want to continue doing it and pay your bills along the way, you know. So money is important.
And dedicate yourself to it without having to go broke and lose your electricity and perhaps your house.
Yeah,
or something
you need
like
those
that.
Things. You need those things,
right.
I think. You do need those things because, you know, you got to feed the machine while you're being creative, I think.
Well, I guess I'm in a place to where I'm not totally involved and I have the freedom to do what I want as a hobby because between my income and my wife's income, you know, we're comfortable. Having a 9-to-5, you know, something that you can rely on is actually beneficial for my situation from the creative standpoint of I can do what I want and take my time with it. and not feel the pressure of actually having to produce things on any kind of regular basis. Because I'm,
it's just like
this show. I do the show when I want, and when I get a guest that has the time to do it, book around their schedule, and then my schedule works into that as well. But I have a lot of freedom, and the freedom is something that I don't want to let go of.
Right.
So it's kind of two different worlds, you know. I'm not involved with it professionally, which gives me a lot more freedom to do what I want with the things that I do, because I have, you know, a 9-to-5 that brings in money that has nothing to do with all of this stuff, you know, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the way
that
I choose to do things. Yeah. I really don't want
to get
involved.
But the 8-to-4 is better than the 9-to-5.
To be honest, I have a 5-to-1, 5-to-2. I mean, I get up at 3:00 in the morning every day.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
I get up at 3:00 in the morning.
You got a real screwed
up
one then.
I'm an early morning guy. I can't work too far into the afternoon. I like coming home early in the afternoon and then coming into the studio and working on things before it gets too late, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Southern California traffic to deal with. I get to avoid all of that.
No, that's wonderful, yeah. That's one thing that you must do.
Yeah, you know, especially when I have to go out to Echo Park. Well, I do that on the weekends, but I choose to do that during certain hours where, you know, the traffic isn't completely horrendous.
Right.
In Southern California anymore, I mean, back in the 80s, it was like the weekends, all the freeways were completely open and free. But there's so many people here in Southern California now that Saturdays and Sundays are almost worse than the rest of the week. It's incredibly crazy. Yeah, so... I don't know. I feel I'm in a good place. A lot of things are getting started, and I have, you know, my job allows me to spend time doing these things, and also allows me the finances to be able to do the things that I'm doing now to build this place. Which, Mike, when you see this place, I hope I'm not asking that you're going to be impressed or anything, but I think that you're going to be like, okay, man,
I'm excited.
He's got some stuff going on. And I can't wait, Mike, to have you here in my home again after 6 years. I honestly think it's been five. But,
well, let
know.
Me tell you something that you don't know. Mike's moving in.
Oh, is he? Mike's
in
Burbank. Nice.
At your place. At your place.
Your place, yeah.
Because you've been building all this stuff.
Yeah.
There might be one room that he can have Northern Shaolin.
That's all he needs.
Manage. You know, it does have a wood floor. You can put some mats down. Maybe bring in some clients.
I live very simple.
He'll be happy with that.
You'd have to live in the studio though.
That's okay. It's not the first time.
Yeah. As long as you got heat.
I remember.
As long as you had heat and air conditioning.
That's right.
I remember the small studio you had back in Redondo back in, 1988? And
that was a long
time
ago.
That was your bedroom / studio.
Yes.
And you had the Roland, you know, 60. You had the, I think you had the Jupiter 8 back then as well. Way back when. Now, you know, now we're talking about, like, history, like going way back. You know, Mike and I, we've known each other for a long time. Going way back. Back in the days when we used to like talk about astral projection and all these weird things that we were into.
That don't exist anymore.
There never was any such thing as astral projection.
That's right.
It was just something
being a teenager.
Because it was interesting. Yeah, exactly.
That's just being a teenager.
And then, of course, we had the Necronomicon, which, you know, I think every teenager should have had the Necronomicon.
Hey, you still can. You sell them at Barnes & Noble, you know?
I know, right? But one thing they do
sell
at Barnes and Noble is the Anarchist Cookbook.
No, nope, not anymore. That's right. You can't find that.
not in this modern society.
No.
But I think
we
all had a copy.
Can't.
Never trying to make LSD out of banana peels.
that wasn't me.
No.
That'd be,
no, but
that'd be
a few people who had a copy of the book. Man, that goes way, way back. Seriously. Well, I want to say I have had an awesome time with you, Al, on the show.
It's been great talking with you.
And like I said, one of the things about Bald Head Radio is you get to go in depth and have a good amount of time to be able to just really get in depth and talk about things and not just have the 10-minute clip. Or, you know, my show is all about having a single or two guests on that can really talk in depth about things. And I hope you had a really good experience with your time on the show.
Yeah, it was great. It's great. You're a great guy. And happy that we got this taken care of. Yeah.
Well, wait, before we wrap,
oh, yeah.
Hold on a second, Brett. We both have a question for you, actually. And because I don't know the answer to this question either. So Al and I were both wondering, where did you get the name Bald Head Radio from? What is that from? What's the inspiration for the name Bald Head Radio? Let's hear it.
Okay, I love this. And this is, I don't bring this up on my show because the show's not about me most of the time. It's about my guests. However, Gilbrando Acevedo asked me this question last year when he was on the show, the second time that he came on my show. And I'm going to plug Bald Head Radio's YouTube channel. Okay. And you can go there. Just search for Gilbrando Acevedo. You can search for on YouTube, just do a general YouTube search for Bald Head Radio Explained with Gilbrando Acevedo. And all the answers are there. And the reason
you're not
why
gonna
I
tell
want
us,
to keep
you're
it,
not gonna tell us.
Yeah, yeah. We need you to tell us.
Right. The reason why I'm not gonna go in depth with it is because the answer that I gave in that clip ended up being twofold. And it was off the cuff, which is what makes it so beautiful. I'll give you the original reason, and that is because when I was creating this show, when I found the hosting site to use to do live shows and be able to take phone calls and whatnot, I reached a step to where I had to create a show name before I could actually finish the process. And I racked my brain for about 10, 15 minutes. And
then you realized you had a bald head.
It's quite the opposite. It just popped in my head. Bald Head Radio just kind of rolled off the tongue. Kind of sounded nice. But as I was doing the show, it became I became an owner of the name, so to speak. I owned it. And for reasons, again, that are explained in that clip. And cheap plug, Bald Head Radio on YouTube. Do a search for Bald Head Radio Explained with Gilbrando Acevedo, and all the answers are there.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. But if we don't like the answer, we're going to see you in person, and we'll have to hash it out in person.
And then when we're done with you, you will have a bald head.
You know what? I will have a fresh shaven head, but it won't be shaven. It's just I keep my hair very short, but I am not bald. I have a full head of hair. I like to keep it short, but that has nothing to do with Bald Head Radio, honestly.
I figured.
It's the irony.
Okay.
There is an irony in that I do not have a bald head, yet my show is called Bald Head Radio. And again, I will, Mike, send you when we – after we have our post-show phone call, I will send you the link to that particular video. And then again on Saturday, you know, if you want to talk about it again, you know, rehash it or whatever. But you know, in the entertainment industry, you gotta hint things, you gotta plug things, you gotta. That's how you get stuff rolling.
That's right.
The video has gotten, you know, a few views here and there, but I have been asked that question quite a few times. But usually live on the air is not when I get asked. This is only the second time on the air that I've been asked by a guest, and I'm glad.
All right, well,
we'll
check it out
because I get to talk about it.
Yeah,
we'll
definitely
check it out. All
definitely
right.
Oh, by the way, Al,
yes,
do not sign that copy of Al Kabong until I get there, because I want you to live sign it for me, which would be totally awesome.
It was already signed. It already got signed.
Already signed.
Oh, thanks.
It's a done deal.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
We don't waste any time. He doesn't waste any time.
Yeah.
You don't.
Can't wait for you.
For me? Who is this guy?
That's what we said.
You know, there is it. And you know, it's all good, man. It's all good. I'm going to shake your left hand, sir, and be happy to see you again, because this will be the second time that I'm actually meeting you in your apartment, your place, and it's going to be – I'm really looking forward to it, man. Seriously, my Saturday.
Well, I'll be happy to see you again, old man.
Remember, I'm 85 years old.
I know.
That's because you remember all these old shows. That's what betrays your age.
Yeah, you know, I gotta really, like, you know, do more to cover up, like, how old I really am. But, you know, doing research, you know, you got to bring the stuff up. It happens.
That's right. All right. Well, we'll
right.
see you.
Definitely.
Okay.
And awesome. Again, thank you, Al and Mike. Great show. Had a great time. And I know you guys did, too.
So did we. Thank you. We had a lot of good times here, yes.
Awesome.
My pleasure, Brett.
All right.
See you soon. All right.
Okay.
Yep.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Yep.
Bye.
This has been Bald Head Radio, and I hope you all have a great rest of your week. Thank you.